Gospel Tangents needs your support. Please consider donating to our website, gospeltangents.com. We'll use your donation to help produce other podcasts and professional documentaries such as this.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. I sat down with Dr. Mark Staker of the LDS Church History Library. Mark is a historian and has written about the first community that accepted the Mormon Church in Kirtland, Ohio. I was surprised to learn that a former slave by the name of Black Pete was one of the leaders of this early Mormon community. Let's listen in on our conversation. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm Rick Bennett. I'm here with Dr. Mark Staker at the Church History Library, and I appreciate you taking some time to talk to us today here.
Well, thank you for including me.
All right. So, I believe you have a PhD in anthropology, is that correct?
It is. I got a PhD in cultural anthropology from the University of Florida.
University of Florida, so go Gators, huh?
Yes, yes.
You were happy with Urban Meyer, the former Ute, and now and then Florida Gator?
He's done well for him, so.
Well, great. So, wanted to talk a little bit about your book, the Ohio Revelations. You probably know the name of it better than I.
Hearken,
right?
O ye people.
There you go.
The historical setting of Joseph Smith's Ohio Revelations.
So. Okay. So it's a great book. I've started it. I didn't finish it. But one of the things, especially with February being Black History Month, that I was personally really surprised at was as you started out the book, you started talking about a former slave by the name of Black Pete. So I thought that'd be a great place to start here, especially with Black History Month. So can you tell us a little bit about Black Pete? What do we know about his earliest life?
The reason I selected Black Pete to start out with was because he's been ignored as an early member of the church, and I thought it'd be a good way to kind of build some of those early events around his life, since he played a major role, actually, in some of the early events in Kirtland that had not been uncovered before. And so I focus on his childhood. Black Pete is born a slave in Virginia, but it's the northern section of Virginia that it becomes part of Pennsylvania as boundaries are adjusted. And so he ends up in Fallowfield, Pennsylvania as a young child. And the reason we know about his mother and his birth is because as they became part of Pennsylvania, they needed to register because Pennsylvania had already established a law manumitting the slaves there over a period of time. And he was just too old by 4 years to receive manumission as a slave, and so he was bound to be a slave his whole life. But he was registered with a mother, Kino was her name, and her name suggests that she had come from West Africa what was called at that time the Slave Coast, and was probably a Muslim of background, and so she had raised him in this white community there in northern Pennsylvania as a child, where he would have grown up working metal for his owners. There was a blacksmithy in the area that he'd worked in, and he would have become a skilled slave as that. And being born just too late to receive manumission from slavery was, of course, a tragedy for him, but it ended up working out that he got his freedom a year after the other slaves in Pennsylvania did, because his slave owner, John Kerr Jr., left in his will that he was to be freed 10 years after his owner's death. And fortunately, his owner died when he wasn't too old, and it then allowed Black Pete over a period of time by 1792 to be freed from slavery. And he then was taken into the family, a relative family of his owners. They were Quakers, and Quakers were opposed to slavery, but they weren't opposed to taking advantage of blacks. And in this case, that appears to be what happened. They continued to have him work for them, and essentially he was a slave for the family, even though he'd been free. And we don't know the details about how that worked out, but it's clear from the historic record that as he moved to Pennsylvania with the family and their setting changed, he suddenly changed his attitude, and he became difficult for them to control and to make work for them. And in the terms of the family, he became ugly.
So now, which are you talking about, the Kerr family, or is this another family?
Well, this is the Kerr family that had married into the Carroll family. It was that Quaker family that I had mentioned that took control of Black Pete, and then they brought him out to Ohio and settled in Kirtland, Ohio. Hercules Carroll, one of the members of that family, had property in northern Kirtland. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself, because Black Pete's there in Kirtland before he gets control of that property. And Black Pete then gains his freedom. He had that, but he asserts his freedom from the family, and he's able to then act on his own. And he becomes involved in a religious community that's developing there in northern Kirtland.
Let me back up just a second there. So you said he was born just 4 years too late. When was he born? Do you remember? Was it about 1775 or something like that?
It was, and I don't remember his birth date exactly offhand, but okay. Yes.
But I guess so. Pennsylvania had a law for emancipating all slaves that were born.
Pennsylvania had a law that would manumit all slaves in 1791, but the law became into effect when it was first issued, which would have been in the 1770s, about the time that the Revolutionary War, and it didn't come into effect until it didn't include those born before that law was established.
Okay. So I think in your book, you weren't sure on the black, on his last name. I think you might have said Carroll, but I've heard it was Kerr.
Well, often slaves were forced to accept their owner's names as their own name. And it is important, you know, why do we call him Black Pete? That sounds a little condescending today. And his owner, John Kerr Jr., called him John as well. John or Jack, it says in the...
So Pete goes by Jack or John as well.
Yeah, John's probably his formal name. Jack, slaves were always given diminutive forms of the name, so it's never Peter, it's Pete. It's never John, it's Jack. But John was his name, Jack is what he was called. And then the record suggests, or, as he's sometimes known, Pete. So Pete appears to be the name that he or his mother selected for him. And when he was registered as a child with his mother, she registered him as Peter. Hmm. And so that seems to be the name she preferred. He was only 5 years old at the time, and so it's probably a name that had come from his mother. Peter would be the formal form, but Peter was the customary usage. Now, did he take the black upon himself, or did other people call him Black Pete? We don't know, but it seems to have been a name that he was comfortable with and used, and people knew him by, and so he became known as Black Pete. Didn't use a last name, maybe because he didn't really accept the last names of his owners and preferred to not have a last name. We don't know. Sometimes slaves did that. They selected, you know, they used different names than their owners, and they kind of asserted some independence that way. So this is Black Pete, who comes to Ohio and becomes active in that region.
Okay, so he was a slave with John Kerr, Peter Kerr.
The Kerr family.
The Kerr family. So then Mr. Kerr dies. He associates with some Quakers for a while. Things don't go well with them. And so then what happens?
Yeah. So John Kerr dies, Mary Kerr then controls him, and he moves into the Carroll family. You don't know how that arrangement had happened, and he comes out to Ohio with the Carroll family. And he then is active in the area. He becomes part of what we know of as the Morley family. He becomes part of this Reformed Baptist community in northern Kirtland Township, Ohio, where they want to restore original Christianity. And what that means to them is they want to create the organization that existed in what they call the primitive church, you know, that you'll have a bishop, that you'll have elders, and that you'll have deacons, and that you will organize yourself in the ways that the original Christian community had organized itself. And what that meant for them as they looked at Acts chapter 2 in the New Testament was that they had all things in common, that they would share their goods with each other, and that the Holy Spirit was involved in their lives, which they were had to work out what that actually meant. And it came to mean, you know, speaking in tongues and being influenced in physical ways by the Spirit. Well, as they were working this out in their religious community, Black Pete, who'd become part of that community, was looked at as chief among them, as one source indicates, or that he became a prophet among them. And it looks like he drew on his own slave background and the slave religion that was had developed in America, kind of more hidden, underground, and so it had drawn elements from West Africa and elements from the Christian community that they were part of, and this amalgamation of different cultural and spiritual and religious beliefs kind of had developed into a slave religious tradition that Black Pete apparently was exposed to. And he drew on that in his involvement with this Morley family. Now, in what ways, we don't know, other than what outsiders saw and commented on, and they're interpreting all of this from their Anglo-white Western American perspective. And so we aren't able to sort out all of the details, but there are some hints. And these hints really come out later on as he becomes part of Mormonism. And how that develops is that as part of this Morley family, Black Pete lives with the Whitneys for a while, Newell, Kay, and Ann Whitney, who have a home in Kirtland Village. And he lives on the farm for a while, and apparently kind of moves around with different people as four missionaries come into Kirtland with copies of the Book of Mormon. They meet on the Isaac Morley farm and preach the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. And they talk about the Church of Christ that has been organized April 6th of 1830 in Fayette, New York. And this Church of Christ that we know today as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has authority to preach the gospel and to baptize, and that there are, and also there's the Book of Mormon that has been translated from an ancient record, and that they read to these people. Well, they don't have a lot of copies of the Book of Mormon with them, and they're taking most of those to Missouri, and it looks like just a few copies are left behind in Kirtland. Black Pete becomes part of this community, and they don't know a lot, as you can imagine. They've only had a few days' interaction with the missionaries. There are a few people that have copies of the Book of Mormon. They don't know a lot about what this Church of Christ is to be. You know, what are their doctrines? What are their practices? Largely, they just continue as the Reformed Baptists, the Disciples of Christ, as they call themselves, and they continue the same organization and the same practices that they had before. But they also turn to the Book of Mormon for information, and they turn to Black Pete, who's a revelator among them, but he also seems to be the closest thing to a Native American as they can find. Now, how do you get from Africa to Native American? Because it's the other. You know, he's culturally different. He looks different, and he has a different cultural background. And so when you're trying to figure out how do we live this restored Church of Christ, well, we look to Native Americans because they're the Lamanites. You know, and what do Native Americans do? I'm getting a little ahead of myself because this develops over a several month period. These Mormon missionaries baptize most of the members of the Morty family, and Black Pete participates in all this. He's preaching and helping with baptisms later on. So we have to assume that he's baptized and that he's ordained a priest as well, along with the rest of these individuals, the men that are converted in this community, because nobody actually says those things about him. But he's clearly part of this community, and he's part of what's going on.
So just want to stop there for a second. So we don't have a priesthood ordination certificate or anything, but it seems likely that he probably did hold the priesthood.
Yeah, we don't have a smoking gun that says Black Pete was ordained to the priesthood and became a priest.
Does anyone refer to him as an elder or deacon or anything that?
No. He's a prophet among them. He's chief among them, so he has some kind of a leadership role, but there's no actual ordination certificate that says he was ordained to the priesthood.
So that's interesting that he's a chief among them. I guess that's kind of an Indian chief kind of a...
Well, it could be looked at that way. I've understood it generally as meaning principal, that he has a lot of authority and influence among them, but it could be also keying off on that Indian idea, because indeed they do look to him for influence on how do you behave as an Indian. Uh-huh. And they are running around the hills doing these pantomime scalping things, because they know stories about that, you know, kind of bloody and gory kind of things. But they're also jumping up on tree stumps, and this is a new area, so there are tree stumps everywhere. You know, they're jumping up on tree stumps and preaching to the people kind of out in the dark, and they're rolling down hills because the spirit has influenced them. And over time, they seem to be incorporating some new things as well, such as speaking in tongues. And what kind of tongues are they speaking in? Indian tongues. They're speaking Indian. Now, we don't have any recordings of these early discussions as to what Indian might sound like to them, and whether, but there are people in their community that had been out west living among Native American communities, including Neil K. Whitney, the store leader, who had been a trader out of Michigan with Native Americans there. And they insisted, oh yeah, these are Indian languages. So there was that focus. And later on, it shifts a bit to talking about Adamic languages, and they're speaking Adamic, but in this early period it's Indian that they're focused on because of that Book of Mormon connection.
Now, I've heard in this early time period that there were Methodists, I believe, that did a lot of speaking in tongues. Is that true, or was that more of a Baptist thing?
I looked through the source material to find early accounts of speaking in tongues before this happens, even among the Shakers. Because it's a Shaker practice as well, the speaking tongues. And I couldn't find anything before Black Pete's introduction of this in the Mormon community. Now, Shakers pick up on it, and within a couple of years in a nearby community, they are practicing speaking in tongues, and they talk about it being a new thing, that they hadn't been doing that before.
So is this something that you think that Black Pete may have introduced to the Mormons in Kirtland, is speaking in tongues?
I believe he did.
Oh, wow.
It's a circumstantial case. There's nobody that says that, but as you look at the evidence, as to where it comes from and these early attempts to practice it, speaking Indian, that it seems to have come from him. It's abolished, put out of the community, and then it comes back a couple of years later. And we'll get back to that in a bit because it's rather interesting how that happens. But they do other things, Book of Mormon things. You know, they pantomime going down the river in canoes. And basically it's what little information do we know about Indians, and what does Black Pete suggest to us about religion, and kind of combining that together, and that's what they're doing. It's just for a short period, a couple of months, but it really has a dramatic impact on them as a community and also on the surrounding community, because they come to think of this is what Mormons are like.
So is this based on the idea of the Book of Mormon, what the Lamanites are Native Americans, and so they're trying to tie current Native American practices to the Book of Mormon?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. The Book of Mormon is about these Indians, you know, anciently, and so we're interested in kind of whatever they're doing today must be what the Book of Mormon people did earlier. And of course, it's largely a fantasy in terms of what they're doing today. Things such as scalping and stuff is kind of more of the popular mind that ends up kind of in their behavior, but it's not direct observation, and it's not good information, you know, that they've incorporated. But it does influence outside perceptions of them. One intriguing, tantalizing detail, because people commented on it from outside the community, and that is they talk about them practicing free love. And what does that mean? Well, what they know about Indians is that they are polygynous, that men in Indian communities have more than one wife. And so it appears that also, there are a number of sources you kind of have to weave together that suggest that something like that's going on as well within this community, that they're practicing this, and that later revelations specifically address this issue at hand in their community. And so that's also something that Black Pete may have been influenced on. There are several individuals that later suggest that he's involved in all this, and they're outsiders suggesting it in a negative context, but it's understandable because the slave community that his mother came from and that most of his associates came from practiced polygamy of some sort in their traditional cultures, you know, they brought with them from West Africa. And so there are some intriguing questions there, and we don't really have good answers to most of those questions at this point. I have to continue to look through the data and see if there's more information that might help shed light on that. But Black Pete's part of this community. He's part of this religious enthusiasm that develops between the time the missionaries arrive in Kirtland on November 2nd of 1830 and early January of 1831. When the first individuals from New York start arriving, with John Whitmer being the first.
Oh, because John Whitmer was one of the missionaries?
John Whitmer, Peter Whitmer is one of the first four missionaries that stop briefly and then head on west, but John Whitmer is sent by Joseph Smith to Kirtland to provide leadership to this community. So he's the first one that comes that actually has experience as a long time member, meaning six month member of the church, and he has some copies of the Book of Mormon he brings with him, and so now they're actually getting good information. He also has a manuscript of the Book of Moses that we have today as part of the Pearl of Great Price, that he has most of, if not all of that, with him as well. So he has some scriptures, he has instructions, and he can provide some leadership, albeit very inexperienced leadership himself. But from that point, the community begins to shift a little bit. And the they pull away from religious enthusiasm, which means, you know, the speaking in tongues, the being overpowered by the spirit, rolling around on the floor, and other kinds of behaviors that they're doing. But they don't shift away enough from that. When Joseph Smith arrives on February 4th of 1831, it's still very much a part of elements of the community. And then that's when Joseph begins to receive revelations immediately on that subject that acknowledge that the gifts of the Spirit are important, but provides direction on that.
I hope you enjoyed part one of our discussion with Dr. Mark Staker. In part two, we'll continue to focus on Black Pete and talk about stories of his life important in the Kirtland era. We'll talk about a black angel that appeared to him and gave him authority to preach among the Mormons. We'll also talk about his attempts to marry in the predominantly white Mormon community of Kirtland.
It would be national news, and it did happen occasionally. It ended up in the national papers that some white person married a black person. But Emma's aunt had done exactly that.
Emma Smith?
Emma Smith's aunt the Hale had married Joseph Wallace, a black man.
Oh, I did not know that.
Nobody did. They kept it quiet.
I hope you'll tune in to our next conversation with Dr. Staker. For more information, please subscribe to our website, gospeltangents.com, where you can purchase a transcript of this podcast for just $3. You can also get one on amazon.com. Please subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube to get an updated interviews. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support us here at GospelTangents.com.